I'll see if I can talk any of my dorm mates into coming along.
16.
Nick was already seated comfortably at a blackjack table when he noticed Vince and some pink-haired girl walk into the garishly decorated student union. The event planner had obviously been trying for an over-the-top, Vegas-style decor with the gold banners and fake statues, but what the decorator had failed to realize was that Vegas's brilliance was in the subtlety beneath the glamour. Nick took no offense to it, though. That was the signature appeal of his hometown. Often imitated, never duplicated. Nick was grateful that Vince had told him about the event. Throwing his first fight to stay off anyone's radar had left an unpleasant taste in his mouth. Tactics and stealth were all well and good, but there was something so viscerally wrong about losing in any way. It had been necessary, though. And as Nick pulled a few more additions into his pile of chips, he felt the sourness ease from his taste buds. It didn't matter that the chips were worthless. It only mattered that he was winning.
"Hit,"
said a female voice next to him. Nick had been seated and working up a hot streak when Mary had plunked herself down next to him. He didn't want to be rude, but he didn't want a mind reader so close to him, either. He had waffled for a few moments, then let it be. The girl could follow him even if he did get up. Besides, he had no idea how good her range was. Even being in the same building might give her free access to his head. Better to stay put and keep up the appearance of friendliness toward his dorm mates. It wouldn't fool her, but that was a lost cause anyway.
"Good play,"
Nick complimented her, as a 10 was laid onto her queen, giving her 20.
"The advice helps,"
Mary replied, without looking at him. This was the first time they had spoken all night. He took her meaning quite clearly.
"Glad to help,"
Nick lied, turning his attention back to the game. He was almost immediately interrupted again.
"Whoa," Vince said as he came up to the table. "That's quite a stack you've accumulated."
"Well, I am from Vegas, after all,"
Nick said.
"And 18, Vince countered. "So you couldn't have hit the casinos. How'd you get so good at blackjack?"
"Chill, Vince. It's a game of luck,"
the pink-haired girl interrupted. There was a beat of silence as Nick watched the word luck leave her lips and enter Vince's head. Once there, it plunked around a few times before finally coming to rest in a spot labeled Natural Conclusion.
"Yeah," Vince said as his eyes narrowed. "You're right, Sasha. It is a game of luck."
The sense of accusation wasn't precisely dripping from Vince's words, but there was definitely some accusatory condensation on them.
"So it's Sasha?"
"I'm Nick, and this is Mary. We're both in Melbrook with Vince. I do apologize for my good friend's poor manners in not introducing us,"
Nick said, switching into his usual affable mood and swinging the focus away from his blackjack success.
"Nice to meet you two,"
Sasha said, giving a slight incline of her head.
"Sasha, would you mind grabbing us a seat at the craps table? I know we wanted to roll some dice, I just need to have a quick word with my dorm mate,"
Vince said. Sasha looked at the two of them for a moment, then shrugged and said,
"Okay."
She wandered off toward the craps area, but not without keeping an eye on them. That girl was sharper than she wanted to let on. Nick could respect that.
"Nick," Vince whispered harshly as soon as Sasha was gone, "do you really think it's a good idea to be doing what you're doing out in the open like this?"
"You mean winning?"
Nick asked innocently.
"I mean using an unfair advantage."
"Hold your horses there, Hoss,"
Nick said in equally low tones.
"First off, this isn't even real money, so stay off the soapbox. Secondly, I'm not doing what you think I'm doing. I'm winning because I know how to play blackjack well. There are some basic strategies any kid who grew up around a city of gambling knows. So re-fucking-lax and go worry about your date instead of your dorm mate.
It isn't a date, Vince snapped immediately.
And I'm sorry. You're right. I guess I was just worried because, well, the whole secret being a big portion of your grade thing.
You really haven't been using?
Ask Mary, Nick replied. See if I've focused or breathed deep even once tonight.
Vince looked at Mary, who didn't turn toward him, but shook her head to the negative anyway.
Sorry, Vince said once more. I guess that whole speech and a day of fighting has gotten me paranoid.
Don't worry about it, Nick assured him. If I were you, I'd think the same thing. Now go catch up to your girl before someone else does.
She's not my girl, Vince said, but he departed from their table and made his way over to Sasha and the craps game. Nick turned back to the blackjack table, annoyed that he had missed several hands while talking to Vince and had now lost track of the cards.
I notice you didn't bother mentioning to him that you don't actually need to breathe deep or close your eyes to use your talent,
Mary said softly.
It wasn't pertinent, Nick defended. After all, I'm really not doing anything.
You don't consider counting cards doing anything?
Mary asked.
Fine. I'm not doing anything that others couldn't do with skill and practice. Besides, for all you know, I do need to shut my eyes to use my talent. Maybe that's why I wear the sunglasses.
No, it isn't,
Mary said, with unfaltering certainty. Nick was ruffled by how sure she was. It was unnerving, talking to someone he couldn't bluff. He wanted to know more about what she could see, but he was afraid of how much he would be exposing of himself. He shrugged off the fear. In for a dime, in for a dollar.
How much do you know?
Nick asked flatly, as he slid several chips out to place a bet.
Enough,
Mary replied, as she followed suit and put her own chips into play.
More than you want me to, which isn't saying much, but less than you're scared I do, which also isn't saying much.
The dealer put two cards in front of each of them, so they each paused to do a quick spot of mental math.
Have you told anyone?
Nick asked.
No,
Mary replied.
And I won't either. I've been hearing stuff I wasn't supposed to all my life. I learned a long time ago that it's best if I treat it like a therapist or an attorney, with ironclad confidentiality.
Is that supposed to reassure me?
Nick asked, as he rapped knuckles against the green velvet, and the dealer handed him another card. An almost instantaneous calculation flew through his head, and he waved off to show he was staying.
It's supposed to let you know where I stand,
Mary replied, tapping her own hand as well. She went for another hit after the first, then elected to stay.
And where is that?
Nick asked, as the dealer began hitting his own stack, stopping once he struck 18.
As your friend, Mary replied. Someone you can talk to and trust. Someone who understands some of the things you've gone through.
Table has 18,
the deal announced. The girl to Nick's right had already busted, so Nick was first to be compared to the dealer's numbers.
19,
Nick announced. To Mary, he resumed his whispering tone.
You'll forgive me if I'm a bit reluctant to take you up on that. I've got trust issues.
No problem,
Mary whispered back.
20,
she announced happily, smiling at all the other players at the table. Both of them pulled in the chips they had won and pushed a few more out for the next round.
I'm just saying,
Mary resumed in her soft tones.
I'm going to be in on just about everything you do anyway. I thought that since there is finally someone you can't lie to, Maybe you'd like to try talking to them. It's not as if you have to worry about giving away something I don't already know.
Nick couldn't think of a snappy comeback for that one, so instead, he just checked his cards. He hated himself for realizing that Mary was right, and he hated her even more, because the moment he thought it, a small smirk crept onto her face.
17.
Alice was bored. She had come along to casino night with the rest of her dorm, with the exception of Herschel, whom no one had seen since the beginning of the day, but the truth was, she had little taste or stomach for craps. There was no nuance to it. Just chunk the dice and pray for the best. Alice preferred her games more strategic. She stood next to Vince and the pink-haired girl he seemed to be getting along with so well. Sasha was her name, if Alice recalled correctly, as they all watched and occasionally participated in the craps game. Her poor luck on her few attempts had hardly endeared her to the game, and that, coupled with the events of the day, were all contributing to her increasingly sour mood. Alice tried to smile and keep her facade plastered up by focusing on the positive. It wasn't as if she had really expected to fare well in the combat trials in the first place. She could only fly, while a significant majority of the girls here had abilities that were far more fighting-based. Still, she had been downed in her first round in less than a minute by some girl with sonic blasting powers. It had hurt, and despite all the preparation she had given herself to brace for the inevitable loss, Alice had found that once the match was done, her pride was stinging a bit as well. It certainly hadn't helped matters when she learned Mary had come out as top of the class. Still, Alice was an academic at heart, and being a hero wasn't just about how many cars you could throw in a minute. It was also about wit, resourcefulness, and intelligence, all of which Alice was confident she could use to elevate her own status. Eventually. Alice abandoned the craps table when she heard Vince and Sasha making plans to meet for breakfast the next morning before heading off to class. They would all be spending their mornings attending their above-ground classes, but the afternoon would find them all down in the secret levels, training up on the things that really mattered. Vince and Sasha both seemed excited about what the next day would hold, which told Alice that they knew nothing of what was actually in store. She did, and she had the good sense to dread it. Alice left the two to their slowly blooming, obvious romance, and wandered across the room to find some entertainment of her own. She passed Nick and Mary, whispering in hushed tones at the blackjack table. If it had been anyone else but Mary, Alice might have lingered to see what they were discussing. With a telepath, though, there was too much risk of giving away more information than she gained. Instead, Alice trudged across the room, passing by the happy faces while wearing one of her own. Eventually, she found herself at the only part of the student union that allowed for seating without participation, the karaoke stage. Some blonde girl Alice recognized from the program was wailing her way through a pop song as Alice gently plunked down in the back. Ignoring the warbling, Alice pulled out her phone and began checking her email. It was bad form to appear so antisocial in a public place, but she needed a moment to gather her thoughts and get into the right frame of mind. A few minutes by herself would be a relatively small concession for being able to mingle and socialize the rest of the night. Alice was so caught up in actively ignoring the poor blonde on stage that she didn't even notice when the song ended. She didn't notice the mild applause or the announcement of the next song either. What she, along with everyone else in range of the speakers, did notice, was what followed. A husky male voice vibrated across the room, breaking into the deep opening chords of a country song. Alice didn't listen to country, and for the life of her couldn't have told you what the song was. At that moment, though, she couldn't hear anything else in the room. Shoving the phone hastily back into her pocket, Alice turned all of her attention to the boy, no, the man, who had pulled a stool on stage and was seated on it as he crooned into the microphone. He was tall, that was apparent, even though he was sitting, and wore a plaid button-down shirt, a small gray cowboy hat, and a pair of clearly worn-in jeans. There was something oddly familiar about his face, though, Alice noted, and his body was hard and lean. He was well-muscled, as his half-open shirt proudly displayed, but with the flat muscle of an athlete rather than the bulky and superficial kind that bodybuilders acquire. If Alice had to guess, which she was actively doing, she would say he was a quarterback in high school, given his physique and frame. Alice's eyes danced around the crowd, noting their reactions to the clear improvement in entertainment. A large chunk of the women in the audience were staring at this mystery man with unabashed interest, the most fervent being the blonde who had sung before him. Many of the men were trying to seem unimpressed by him and his performance, though a few, who must have recognized the song, were happily enjoying his rendition. As he sang, the man's own hazel eyes swept the crowd, lingering ever so intentionally on the women eagerly looking up at him. They came to rest on his blonde predecessor, who looked as though she was applying all her self-control toward not letting out a squeal. The song finished, and the man stood from his stool and took a wide bow. There was blatantly more applause than there had been for the girl, yet, as the man walked down from the small platform that was serving as a stage and tipped his hat at the blonde by way of introduction, it seemed like she neither noticed nor cared. For her part, Alice felt a bit better. Watching a gorgeous man sing had really done nothing for her, except that it had pulled her mind out of its funk and forced her to focus on something else for a while. Settling back in, she felt her problems were somewhat less pressing than they had been before, as was usually the case, and decided she would take a cue from the singing cowboy. This was an event to meet people and make connections. In other words, a social activity. That made it Alice's home turf. She might not be able to beat everyone in combat, but there were few who could work a room like Alice Adair. Alice rose from her seat and set off. 18. Vince had some trouble finding Hughes Hall the next morning. In his defense, Lander was a very large campus, and he had hardly had free time to explore it. He might have gotten up a bit earlier if he had been thinking ahead, but casino night had gone on a lot longer than he'd expected, and it turned out being frozen solid had left him drained by the day's end. On the plus side, he had won enough chips to put his name in a few raffles. He had even managed to win a clock radio. It wasn't quite as nice as the $200 gift card Nick had won, but it was something to be happy about. If Vince had been a bit pettier, he might have accused Nick of rigging the raffle, but given the amount of chips his sunglasses-wearing friend had turned in, it didn't really surprise anyone when Nick's name was drawn. That boy was either cheating up a storm or really knew how to play blackjack. Since he was one of Vince's few friends, Vince was opting to give him the benefit of the doubt. Had Vince been a bit more experienced in the ways of the world, it might have dawned on him that the two options were not mutually exclusive. Vince was in a good mood, even as he scrambled to find Sasha's dormitory. It was his second day attending Lander, and the first day of real classes. He had basic math and literature classes in the morning, followed by gym and ethics of heroism in the afternoon. He still wasn't sure why gym was ascribed a 3-hour chunk of his time every day, but he assumed there would be a logical explanation when he got there. Besides, he and Sasha were getting breakfast before their morning classes together, which made him just a bit happier than he would admit to anyone who was asking. He did enjoy women with multicolored hair. Vince had been polite enough to invite his fellow dormmates to come along. Nick had said no due to an early class. Mary had politely declined without explanation, and Alice had informed him that she would be avoiding the dorm food as much as was humanly possible. Vince had looked for Herschel as well, but to no avail. It seemed their friend hadn't even come home last night. Vince was beginning to get worried, but he was trying to hope for the best. If he didn't see his portly dorm mate soon, though, Vince was planning on finding Mr. Numbers or Mr. Transport. Vince saw the bell tower and finally got a sense of where he was. With its lush foliage, sprawling campus, and large buildings, Lander was one of the largest and most scenic colleges in California. All of which sounded great on the brochure, but was somewhat less charming when trying to hustle between locations across campus. Vince was really hoping he didn't have any classes that were too far apart when he finally saw a sign on a multi-storied building that read, Hughes. He walked into the lobby quickly, checking the wall clock and realizing with a twinge that he was late. It wasn't by much, but it was enough to irk him. He had been taught that punctuality was one of the most important virtues to have. He made his way through the white-tiled entryway and past the door leading into the dorm area itself. Some of the dorms were segregated into male and female, his own being one of them, but Hughes had alternating floors. The rooms were done in suites, with two rooms sharing a common living room area. It engendered a sense of community, or so Sasha had told him, since people could leave their living room doors open and still preserve a getaway in their bedroom. It occurred to Vince that whoever had built Melbrook for him and the others had clearly taken some cues from the Hughes dormitory setup. In fact, Vince was right. Alice had toured the Lander campus, along with several others, before talking with the architects who would ultimately design Melbrook. She had found the Hughes design an excellent integration of privacy and community, though her original designs had her room set off in a separate area. Specifically, it was in an entirely separate building on the opposite campus and utterly unaffiliated with Melbrook in any way. That attempt had failed, but she'd considered it something of a long shot anyway. Vince bounded up the stairs to the second floor and began moving down the hallway. Since the rooms were arranged sequentially, it didn't take him much time at all to find Sasha's room, 216. He was about to knock when he heard shouting from the other side of the door. Vince couldn't quite make out the words, but they definitely sounded angry. There were several voices, at least two female, with one probably male. Vince was still standing there, debating on whether he should knock or wait a few moments for things to calm down, when he heard an object land heavily against the door. All thoughts of tact aside, Vince jerked the doorknob, which was fortunately unlocked, and burst into the room. "Is everyone okay?" Vince yelled, before he could take in the scene around him. As the sights the room held registered into his mind one by one, it became clear that things were undoubtedly not okay. There were two girls and a boy, all right. The most attention-grabbing one was the blonde that Sasha had pointed out as her roommate Julia yesterday, who was a few steps outside of her bedroom and into the living room. She was rearing back a large, black pump, clearly intending to send it flying. If Vince had bothered to look down, he would have noticed its twin resting by his feet, the obvious culprit in the case of the mysterious thudding noise against the door. Julia was wearing a sizable plaid shirt, though with her arm reared back and pulling the fabric up, it was evident that the shirt wasn't quite sizable enough. Standing between Julia and the guy, looking haggard and unhappy, but playing the referee, was Sasha, wearing a tight pink shirt and gray sleep shorts. Ordinarily, Vince would have savored this image a bit more than he did. Unfortunately, his attention couldn't help but be captured somewhat by the other male in the room. He was a heavy guy, wrapped poorly in a towel, and was hunched over in a submissive position. He was clearly trying to defend himself verbally, but from the look on Julia's face, Vince had a feeling the boy hadn't gotten that far. Leaping into this chaotic scene, as all three pairs of eyes turned on him in surprise, Vince tried to look on the bright side. At least he had found Herschel.
19. Who the fuck are you?
Julia screeched at Vince. I'm Vince, he said lamely. Sasha and I were meeting to go get breakfast.
Vince, thank God!
Herschel cried, dashing over to his dorm mate's side and all but cowering.
This woman has gone mad. She won't listen to anything.
Why are you in a blanket? Vince asked.
Why do you know this guy?
Sasha said.
Why were you in my bed?
Julia thundered. Vince was impressed. He would have never thought a girl her size would have pipes like that.
I keep trying to tell you that. You fell asleep with me.
Herschel said, with as much projection as he had. It turns out that wasn't much, but Julia's eruption had silenced the room pretty effectively.
Bullshit, I did!
Julia denied.
I was with Roy last night. You know, the tall, hard-bodied man that you definitely are not!
Can someone please tell me what the hell is going on? Vince tossed out, hoping to get some sense of what was happening around him.
I've been listening to them for a while, Sasha said. I think I understand the gist of it. If you two don't mind, I'll recap and we can see where the disagreement is.
Both Herschel and Julia nodded their agreement, though Herschel did so with gratitude, and Julia with barely suppressed rage.
Thanks, Sasha continued. So Julia met Roy last night at the karaoke part of Casino Night. They came home and got busy.
Got busy? That's presumptuous,
Julia butted in.
There was a tie on the door. I slept on the living room couch, and these walls are a lot thinner than you seem to think they are,
Sasha replied succinctly.
Oh,
Julia said, a bit of the wind leaking out of her sails.
Whatever, I don't give a damn. I was just recapping, Sasha said. So they were at it for a few hours, kudos to Roy, by the way, then finally passed out and we all got some sleep. I wake up this morning to her throwing a hissy fit and beating the shit out of the guy in the towel. It seems she and Sex Man passed out last night, but she and that guy were the ones that woke up together.
Which I can explain,
Herschel interjected, before Julia could build up to another tirade.
If Vince would please shut the door.
Vince complied, and Herschel continued.
I am Roy. Technically. He's the version of me with powers.
I thought you were a shifter, Vince said.
I am. I shift into Roy. He's the part of me with abilities. Also, charm and confidence.
Herschel admitted a bit sadly.
And looks,
Julia spat out. Hey now, Vince said. There's no need for that. Herschel didn't sneak into your room and crawl into your bed. You took him home and he turned back in his sleep.
He couldn't have warned me?
Julia asked.
Roy was a bit preoccupied,
Herschel said, blushing freely.
Wait, so Roy is a hot, super version of you? Sasha asked. I'm just trying to get a grip on this.
Yes and no, Herschel said. Same body, with the obvious alterations, but we have entirely different personalities. Roy tends to be easily distracted.
So I was a distraction? Well, why the hell isn't Roy here explaining all of this?
Julia asked.
Roy is rarely inclined toward dealing with the morning after, Herschel said.
Without warning, Julia whipped the shoe in a straight path for his head. Sasha knocked it away faster than Vince could see, literally, and Herschel desperately tried to cool the blonde.
It wasn't just that. There's a certain trigger that brings Roy out, and when it wears off, I go back to being me. It was an unavoidable change. I know that Roy liked you very much.
He did?
Julia suddenly seemed to calm exponentially.
How do you know? What did he say about me?
Well, we don't talk. Not really. But we have access to each other's memories and what we were thinking or feeling at any given time,
Herschel explained.
Oh,
Julia said.
Wait, does that mean you remember everything from last night?
Well, yes,
Herschel said, bracing himself for assault. This time, though, it was Julia's turn to go red.
Well, this clearly seems like just a giant misunderstanding, Julia said quickly.
Her next words bounded out her mouth so fast they nearly fell on top of one another.
Herschel, I'm sorry I threw things at you. Why don't you grab your pants? I'm going to be in the shower. I'll see you all later!
Without a pause or a breath, Julia snatched up a towel from inside her room and bolted out of the living room on a beeline toward the showers and away from the remaining three.
Huh, Sasha said. That must have been some kinky shit. I'd really like not to comment,
Herschel said, as he gathered up his clothes from Sasha and Julia's bedroom floor.
Herschel, it doesn't look like those really fit you, Vince pointed out. They don't, he said. I'll be able to get home in them, though. Besides, we make it a rule to take care of the other's clothing whenever possible. It's a consideration that keeps both of our wardrobes intact. So, you still haven't told me how you know each other, Sasha pointed out.
Remember when we saw the name Roy on the boards yesterday and I told you about my dorm mate Herschel? Vince asked.
Oh,
Sasha said.
Well, that explains why Herschel wasn't up there, at least.
Herschel had shut the door to the bedroom and was presumably getting dressed.
Poor guy, Vince said. I can't imagine this was how he wanted to start his career at Lander.
I wouldn't feel too bad for them. I got a front audio seat for last night's show, and I have a feeling the memories of that experience were worth it,
Sasha said.
You think your roommate is that good? Vince asked.
Maybe, but I also know something you don't,
Sasha said.
Do tell.
I know that Julia's power is to make duplicates of herself,
Sasha said.
Like illusions or dummies? Vince asked.
Like real-life, walking, talking, capable of independent action duplicates,
Sasha elaborated.
Well, imagine that, Vince said.
No need,
Herschel replied as he stepped out of the bedroom. It was an awkward ensemble that adorned his body, since Roy was clearly taller and leaner, but nothing was bursting, so it seemed Herschel was right and he would be able to get back to Melbrook.
I'm afraid I'll have to apologize, but knowing she has that ability means I'm almost positive Roy will be calling on her again.
Just spare me the morning fiasco next time, Sasha said.
And, if possible, keep Silver here awake instead of me. Melbrook is probably just as nice a place to get it on.
I'll keep that in mind, but sadly, I can make no promises, Herschel said.
I'll see you at Melbrook, Vince.
Sasha, thank you for your understanding.
No worries, Sasha said with a wave.
I sort of expected this. It is college, after all.
With a nod, Herschel stepped out the door,
keeping his eyes peeled for fear of running into Julia, leaving Vince and Sasha alone in the living room area.
"So," Sasha said after a moment, "you wishing you had talked to the girl that's a walking orgy instead of the chick with the colored hair?"
"Nah," Vince replied. "I've got a thing for girls in gray workout shorts, so you're still narrowly in the lead." Sasha laughed, then looked at what she was wearing. For the first time all morning, she became all too aware of just how well her shorts lived up to their name, and the fact that her tight, pink shirt wasn't being hampered by the presence of a bra. The thought riding on the coattails of the previous two was the realization that Vince must be just as aware of these things.
"Ready for food in 5,
Sasha yelped as she moved past Vince in a blur and slammed the door to her bedroom behind her. Vince wished he could have seen her mad dash for cover, but that was the sacrifice you made when you hit on a girl with super speed. 20. Nick had never suspected he would be grateful for assigned seating, but as he took his desk at the end of the row next to a short boy with messy hair, Nick did take a moment to thank his lucky stars. It wasn't that he preferred aisle seats. He had a feeling that no position in the room would liven up ethics of heroism, but it did make things a bit easier on him. Nick had known when he chose the cover persona of a happy-go-lucky, chatter-happy dimwit that there would be certain concessions involved. One that he hadn't counted on grating as much as it did was the need to be around his fellow dormmates constantly, seeking them out and keeping conversations aloft. He'd vested ample time with Vince, but the others were a bit more difficult to wrangle, and of course, Mary was a lost cause. Thus, if he had been able to choose his own seat, he would have been forced by his own sense of commitment to take one near his fellow Melbrook residents. Being placed on the end, away from them, allowed him a measure of alone time without offending his actor's sensibilities. Nick extracted a binder and a pen from his bag and turned to an untouched section. He already had notes from his economics and accounting classes that morning, so this was his last mind stretcher of the day. Afterwards came gym, whatever that entailed, and then he would be done with his first day of college. It was pleasant of them to have put it on a Friday at least, allowing the students a chance to acclimate to the town around Lander. Nick perused the room, taking cursory notes and finding the positions of the others from his dorm. Herschel had finally popped back up that morning, and he was easy to spot as he waded through the rows, awkwardly trying to find his spot. The others took a few minutes to locate, since the room was full of the freshman class, all clad in their black uniforms. He managed to locate the final one, Mary, just as the door opened and Dean Blaine walked into the front of the room.
"Good morning, class," Dean Blaine said with a large smile. "As all of you will hopefully remember, my name is Dean Blaine, and I will be your teacher for Ethics of Heroism. And before anyone asks, no, you aren't getting special treatment. I consider it my personal pleasure to instruct the new freshmen every year, helping them to understand not just what we do, but why it is so important that we do it."
A hand went up quickly. The class's suck-up, no doubt. Nick knew there would be one. There always was. And of course they couldn't wait to identify themselves by asking the first question. There was no surprise in Nick that someone was already drawing attention to themselves. What did surprise him was the voice of the question-asker. He chided himself for not having anticipated someone that obvious.
"Does that mean you and the two coaches make up the entirety of the Hero Certification Program's staff?"
Alice asked, once Dean Blaine pointed to her.
"Certainly not,"
Dean Blaine assured her.
There are several more professors on staff here, though you won't be working under any of them until sophomore year.
Why not?
This time, the question came from a tall girl with her hair pulled back tightly into a braid. She didn't bother to raise her hand.
Well, simply put, you wouldn't gain anything from them yet,
Dean Blaine explained.
You see, freshman year of this program is the year that we ready your minds and bodies for what is to come over the following three. This is the year that you get the basics, and it's the year we see how many of you have the determination to see our program through to the end. The other professors will be working with you on more specialized programs, programs that you don't have the groundwork for yet.
See it through?
Alice shot the tall girl, who apparently didn't believe in the courtesy of the hand raise, a dirty look.
Yes, said Dean Blaine. The training here is rather grueling, and many who think they want to pursue this line of work soon change their minds once they experience it. The dropout rate of the Hero Certification Program is approximately 65%. That does not include students who are cut by the staff, either. That number only represents voluntary departures.
The tall girl let out a low whistle, but ceased her questioning of the dean.
Anyway,
Dean Blaine continued,
as all of you should know, this will be the only Friday that we meet. Normally, this class will be on Tuesdays and Thursdays, with the other 3 days allotted for personal study. I'm sure most of you are counting on that as a free period, but I assure you, it is time you should cherish. That is a boon we only provide to the freshmen to help ease the transition. Now then, on to the syllabus.
There was a collective sigh that rippled through the class. No one groaned, but it was close. Dean Blaine laughed.
Same reaction every year. Forgive my little joke, but there won't be a syllabus. This is a discussion class, one for which you will be graded on participation and attendance, but written work doesn't really mesh with the subject matter we're covering. If I asked you for a paper on why heroes give themselves and their careers to protecting the safety of the people, you'd just be up all night writing words. When I ask you that question, which I will, incidentally, I want to look you in the eye and hear what you really think. So come prepared to talk and think. But otherwise, you won't need anything but your wit.
That was a relief to almost everyone else in the class. Nick swore inwardly. Now he'd have to bluff the dean at least twice a week. Of course, he could always answer honestly, but Nick was smarter than he appeared. At least smart enough to know that was a dumb idea. The views Nick had been raised with didn't correlate so well with the rest of society's values. The truth had its place, and it was called a deathbed.
That brings us to the matter of today. I'm sure many of you are anxious to be off to the next class and find out what Jim is all about,
Dean Blaine said. There were a few enthusiastic nods around the room. Clearly, the idea of training openly with their abilities appealed to many of the students.
Well, I commend your curiosity, and I'm going to reward it. Today, we will be dismissing Ethics of Heroism early to give you all an extra half hour of gym. I think it will give you a proper appreciation.
The rest of the class seemed upbeat as they stowed their binders and began rising from their seats. Nick was a bit more apprehensive. Among all of them, he seemed to be one of the few who noticed that Dean Blaine hadn't told them what exactly they would be getting a proper appreciation of. He tried to assure himself that he was just reading too much into things. Several hours later, when he finally had the energy to, he admonished himself for not trusting his instincts. 21.
2 minute break,
Coach George shouted to the freshman.
Oh, thank you, dear and sweet merciful Lord of Heaven,
Herschel gasped. Vince and Nick had a similar sentiment, but lacked the breath to express it. What the course schedule had referred to as gym was in fact a tortuous living hell. For the past 3 hours, there had been nothing but non-stop physical exertion. Push-ups, sit-ups, weight training, resistance training, all with running in between. There had been a total of 5 2-minute breaks, counting this one, and the rest of the time had been spent constantly active. Herschel cursed himself for showing up to gym. He knew it had been a stupid idea when he did it, but after the morning's incident, he couldn't bear being Roy again so soon. He had imagined that he would be able to handle whatever physical activities were thrust upon him for at least one day. He had been wrong. He had been oh so very wrong. The only upside was that almost no one was faring well throughout this training. Vince and Nick were both gasping for air beside him as they stopped running, and across the track he could see the girls leaning against the wall, resting with as much vigor as possible. The coaches had separated the boys and girls into 2 herds at opposite ends of the track, warning that dire consequences would occur if anyone fell so far behind that they wound up in the other sex's herd. A young-looking boy with messy, brown hair had been the only one so far, and Coach Persephone had swept him off to another area. No one wanted to know what he had to do. Truthfully, though, Herschel wasn't sure how long it would be before others followed suit. The only reason Moore hadn't lagged behind was that both groups were losing speed and stamina at similar rates. Near the head of the boys' group, a bald guy was holding it together pretty well, and next to him was a boy with short, blonde hair who didn't even seem to be sweating or breathing hard. Those with physical-based powers were kicking ass at life today. Herschel cursed himself again. If Roy were doing this, he wouldn't need a rest at all.
Why did we let Dean Blaine dismiss us early?
Vince asked as he sucked in air.
We're idiots,
Nick responded instantly.
He was right, though. I now have a profound appreciation for ethics of heroism.
Vince and Herschel nodded their agreement. Neither would be fantasizing about another early release anytime soon. Or ever, for that matter.
Time's up, you overconfident wimps!
Coach George yelled. It couldn't have been 2 minutes. There was no way it was 2 minutes. Herschel felt tears welling up inside him. He couldn't take any more of this. He was out of shape to begin with. At least the others had some semblance of stamina. Before he could actually lose control, though, Coach George hollered once more.
Everyone run over here and take a knee!
They followed his instructions quickly, never more happy in their entire lives to sit down on the hard wooden floor than they were at that precious moment. Coach George stood in front of them. Coach Persephone came up next to him. Somewhere inside, Herschel felt Roy stir at the sight of her. Herschel shoved him down immediately. It was bad enough he'd been getting dirty looks from Julia all day. The last thing he needed was to be labeled as the student who tried to bang a coach, even if it wasn't really him that was doing it.
You did piss poorly today,
Coach George began.
That amount of exercise shouldn't even phase a hero, but you all were struggling just to make it to the end. With precious few exceptions, I dare say none of you would have finished if we kept going for the extra 30 minutes.
Herschel certainly wasn't going to argue that point, and he suspected none of the other freshmen would either.
When this year is over, you're going to look back on today with a sense of nostalgia for how light the workouts were. You're going to have fantasies that when you come into class, we just tell you to run most of the time. This will be the happiest day of your career in gym, because from here on out, it only gets worse.
Coach George said. The scariest part of his mini-speech was that he wasn't yelling or trying to put fear into them. He seemed to be sincerely warning them, which made it all the more terrifying.
Now, before I hand things off to Coach Persephone to talk about how the rest of this year will work, there are two people I want to see up front. Chad Taylor and Mary Smith, get up here.
Mary made her way slowly to the front. She was dripping with sweat and still breathing hard, but she seemed to have held together better than many of the others, Herschel included. The boy who rose was the short-haired blonde who seemed perfectly at ease. It was as though he had been sitting in air conditioning all day. Not even his hair was too ruffled. Herschel didn't know what his ability was, but in this situation, it was an awesome boon. It was humorous to see the two standing next to each other, Chad with his height and broad shoulders, next to Mary's slim frame and understated smile. If someone was looking in from the outside, they would have never guessed what those two had in common.
Okay, class, I want you to take a good look at these two. Before, they were just names, but now you've seen their faces. These are the two freshmen standing at the top of the heap. They are the number one ranks from both sexes, and I have to tell you, there is a large gap between them and the rest of you. So burn these faces into your minds, because from now until the end of the year, your only real goal is to beat them. You have 1 year to get stronger, get faster, get better, and take another shot at the combat trials. In the world of heroes, if you aren't the strongest, you're just next in line to die. Work hard,
Coach George said. He dismissed Mary and Chad to go sit down, then took a step back as Coach Persephone came to the front.
I want to speak briefly with you about the year to come, Coach Persephone said. For the first semester, we will be spending all 3 hours as we have today, only with gradually increasing intensity. This is done to give you the base endurance and strength that every hero needs to function. After winter break, however, the format will change. We will still be spending the first 2 hours with physical training, but afterward we will be splitting you into two classes. They will be combat training and alternative training.
There was a murmur among the students. What kind of training was there besides combat? Coach Persephone ignored the commotion and went straight to answering the implied question.
Alternative training is where we will help those of you with skills ill-suited to fighting learn to use them effectively in the field. Though some of you will no doubt think that this is inferior to combat training, let me assure you that there are ways to protect the innocent for those of us who can't throw a tank.
She paused for a moment, and Herschel thought he saw her dart a glance at Coach George. But as she resumed a moment later, he assured himself it must have been imaginary.
As for who will go into what class, the top 5 ranked students from each sex will automatically be in combat training, while the bottom 5 will automatically be in alternative training. The rest of you will be evaluated by Coach George and me to determine where your talents lie.
Coach Persephone explained. A hand went up shockingly fast. Herschel recognized the question asker as Sasha from his morning misadventure.
Yes, Miss Foster?
Coach Persephone said, pointing to Sasha.
What if we are in the bottom 5 but really want to do combat training? Is there any way for us to prove we can handle it?
Actually, yes, Coach Persephone said. You can challenge another student for their rank. The two of you will be assigned a supervisor, a combat room, and a healer on hand. Then you will duke it out, and whoever is standing at the end keeps the higher rank.
But why would people with higher ranks agree to a challenge? All they can do is lose, Sasha pointed out.
They very well might deny you the right to challenge.
Of course, this is a graded class that requires a passing grade to continue with the Hero Certification Program, and you will find nearly all of you lack the physical strength to pass it on merit alone. Fighting in challenges earns you bonus points, and successfully defending your rank earns you significantly more points. On the other hand, declining challenges will take points off of your grade, so sitting pretty on your rank is a dangerous move to make, unless you are confident that you're strong enough to handle every hurdle Coach George and I will put before you. Coach Persephone said. Herschel felt his heart sink. He had been certain that the fighting was behind them until the end of the year. Herschel comforted himself by trying to remember that he wouldn't actually have to fight anyone. Roy was the one with the ranking. There are rules for the challenging process, though, Coach Persephone continued. The main one is the rule of five. You can only challenge someone within five ranks of you. If you want someone higher, you'll have to climb your way to them, challenge by challenge. Additionally, the top five on either side cannot be challenged by anyone lower. So rank six cannot go after rank five, even though they are one rank apart. This is due to the difference in ability that the top five have compared to the rest of the class. They may challenge within their ranks, but otherwise, none of you can fight them until the end of the year. Aside from that, make sure all fights are registered and monitored. Otherwise, they don't count, and, in fact, will be punished severely. Everyone understand? The class nodded collectively. Good. Now go hit the showers. You all stink to hell. Oh, and enjoy the weekend. It's the last one you'll have for months with only minor soreness, Coach Persephone said.
22. Mary Smith, daughter of William and Rebecca Smith, diagnosed with abilities at age 2 when she was discovered telepathically lifting her blocks. Confirmed to be powered at age 5 when training and coaching left her unable to block out others' thoughts. Several more years of attempts to gain control ended in failure and validated the diagnosis. Left home at the age of 10 to live in the woodlands her grandfather had willed her mother. Maintains contact with family when she goes into town for supplies, usually semi-annually. Mr. Transport read from the top paper stuffed into the manila folder.
If she still sees her parents, shouldn't she remember her name?
Mr. Numbers pointed out. Apparently, she never really learned it, Mr. Transport explained as he flipped through her file. Since her telepathy was always active, she could sense when people's thoughts were directed at her. The name wasn't reinforced, and eventually, the few people who interacted with her lost the habit of using it.
That makes sense, I suppose. What it doesn't do, though, is explain why she can tolerate a range of 5 miles if she's been out of civilization for 7 years. Her focus should have atrophied, not evolved, Mr. Numbers said nervously.
He rose from the table in the living room of his and Mr. Transport's apartment and went to the fridge to get a bottle of water. I've been digging into that, Mr. Transport replied. It seems that even in the forest she never got silence. Animals still have thoughts. They're just more primordial than humans. From the telepaths I've talked with, they describe it as hearing a conversation in a foreign language. It might be loud, but because it's gibberish, it's easier to ignore. That's why she was able to live there and hold on to at least some of her sanity.
Some of her sanity, Mr. Numbers mumbled. For all the pity people keep showing her, the girl seems to be adjusting fine. The bear thing is a bit odd, but otherwise, she's doing as well as the others, and better than some.
She's a telepath. She knows what normal people are thinking, so she emulates those thoughts and the actions that follow. Just because she can fake societal adaptation doesn't mean there aren't some scars on her from years as a Poward, Mr. Transport said.
Yes, except those scars have turned out to be riverbeds that